Sorry, they closed the room, so no leaving anymore. So, hello Sweden. Have you enjoyed Tech Day so far? Yes. At least you're responsive. Last time I spoke at a Swedish audience, they were mostly silent. So it seems to be a trend in Sweden. But luckily I'm from Belgium, so that helps. Because the Belgian audience is as silent as you are. First a pop quiz. Who's IT pro in the room? All of you? Oh, only show hands again? Because 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, most of them. And who's an IT manager? Devs? Okay. And what is everybody else then? Just interested. Okay. So welcome to my session on the hybrid connection from Azure to the on-prem storage story called Store Simple. It's a love story about cloud and on-prem and how that you don't have to fear of losing your job when you have something wrong with data. Yeah. Maybe it wouldn't be impolite to introduce myself first. I am Mike Martin. I am a Belgian Azure MVP. I work for a company called Crosspoint Solutions. We mainly do BI and CRM, but that's off topic now. I do a lot of hybrid solution thinking. I'm an architect when it comes down to Azure, both on infrastructure, as on PaaS-ier solutions, as on development, and even trying to help customers implement a DevOps-y way of working. You know, everybody knows that buzzwords nowadays, DevOps. Everything needs to be DevOps. I think nobody can really give a good understanding of what DevOps is. Everybody thinks it's just about tooling. I say it's about collaboration and just talking to each other and being hybrid. And this is also a link to my talk, since hybrid is key here, right? If you want to follow me on Twitter, don't fear a big data avalanche, because I used to tweet a lot. Sometimes people call me a nightmare when it comes down to big data streams, and that Twitter has to open its own data center just for me. I think it's a little bit exaggerated, but hey. I also have a blog somewhere which you can follow me on. If you want to send me a mail afterwards, you can just mail me to my short handled mailing address. So Sweden, last time I was here, small 4 weeks ago, I got invited by Magnus Masterson. You know that guy, Azure MVP. He invited me to Cloudburst, and I got over here, but I got sick, so I couldn't do my talk. I was about to do a talk on containers and Windows and Nano and the impact of Azure development on containers. But the last time, something else happened when I was in Sweden. So on the last morning at 4 a.m. a big bang, and I wasn't talking about a TV series or a new solar system evolving. No, a big bang in front of my hotel room took place. And I took a look out of the window, and this is what I saw. So somebody threw a burning bomb, on their car, and it exploded. I thought, well, Sweden is a pretty safe country to reside in, but apparently I need to change my vision on that. Well, so I thought, well, Sweden isn't that bad. Maybe just one bad event. It could happen. Now, for this, and where's the link with this, for this talk, I also have a bit of an issue, since I also had a big bang at home. Since we're talking about Store Simple and an appliance, well, the appliance that I used to demo kind of broke due to a firmware update. So I would like to apologize myself in advance for not being able to show you a full stream demo. Why is that? Because I don't have access to the appliance anymore because the RAID controls or something wrong with it. So we've done an update of the firmware and there something went wrong. Microsoft is investigating it, so luckily we have good support. But that means that the device is dead, so may it rest in peace. May we have a moment of silence for the device. So that means that I cannot show you how the device looks on the on-prem side, but that also meant that I couldn't create anything new with storage impacted. So that means I can only show you some parts of the portal, walking through a couple of things, but not really showing an end-to-end demo. So for that, I apologize. That wasn't the intent, that wasn't the meaning. But now you know in advance. So the good part of that is it could be that you're out 15 minutes earlier to get a good cup of coffee. So I hope you can live with that. So let's get started. Are there questions before? Still, if you still want to leave now, please go ahead, knock yourself out. Cool. Now, this hybrid story in Azure is where Microsoft is really, really good at. And when we take a look at the storage story, who runs Azure workloads today? Is there anybody that runs Azure workloads? One guy? What do you run? Infrastructure as a service? PaaS? Websites? Sorry, come again? More software as a service. So you're running a website somewhere on an Azure website or work roles in cloud. Yeah. So you do know that you have to design your storage layer correctly then too, right? That you need to access the storage and stuff like that. So storage is a fundamental part of IT, whether it's on-prem or in the cloud. You always need to have a good design. Yeah. And it's no different with a hybrid scenario. Yeah. Now, today, with this one consistent platform, this cloud OS thing, Microsoft wants to make it easier for customers. Do note, I'm not a Microsoft FTE, I'm not a Microsoft employee, but I do evangelize their product. So in the storage story, they have a lot of capabilities that you can use. Yeah. First of all, you've had the traditional storage where you connect Windows Server 2012 with storage pools and all these new features that they have introduced a couple of years ago and that will improve with Windows Server 2016. And then we have this new concept of running our hybrid cloud environment by means of Azure Stack and Stack Storage, which allows you to create storage accounts on-prem like you used to do in the Azure environment. So bring Azure storage to your on-prem, sort or less. And then we have the hybrid scenario. This is where this talk will mainly go over. Yeah. It's store simple with Azure storage, so you can have either failover by means of virtual appliances, or you can have deduplication in buckets flowing over, which I will explain in a second. And then, in the end, you have public cloud storage. If you want to use VMs or something like PaaS, you need to deploy some files on there. You need to design it very well, too. Especially when you're doing EOS, you need to take into account certain design patterns. Like, for instance, you cannot use more than 40 VMs on one storage account. You need to make sure that your disks don't get throttled, and so on, and so on, and so on. So these are all things that you need to take care of. Yeah. But you get a wide array of from on-prem to cloud deployment possibilities in storage. Right. Now, if you take a look at traditional storage in a data center architecture, yeah, what you usually see is you get some primary storage, you get some archiving, and then we have everything which is related to backup, like disk-based backup, tape if you still have it. And then you want to start thinking about offsite disaster recovery and geo-resiliency for those who run multi-data centers and so on and so on. Yeah. But that comes also with some issues. It gets complex. Yeah. You get, first of all, storage is not cheap. Yeah. It grows. Yeah. Sometimes it's hard to predict the growth of your storage. We have a tendency to see in Azure, for instance, we went from 30 trillion objects in storage last year to 50 trillion objects in the beginning of this year. It duplicates almost every 6 months. So a little bit like Moore's Law, but then on storage it's also applicable. Yeah. Same applies to your own data center. Your users don't have the tendency to throw anything away. You need to have more archiving, and you know, okay, we can use lower I/O storage for that, which is cheaper, and you don't need Fusion I/Os for that. You just can have some traditional spindles there, which can be cheaper. But still, it needs to be thought of that it is expensive. So, as a recap, storage cost and infrastructure, you don't want to put any, you need to put in some SANs or some NASs or just a bunch of disks that you want to attach to it. And you need to protect it also. If you want to do failover, make sure that your backups are working, first of all. But you also need to make sure that these access to your data is secure, right? Sometimes you need some write management on it, stuff like that. So you also need somebody who designs your storage. So you have some other resource constraints, and that all comes with a cost. So this is a fair overview of what's going on. Now, what we traditionally see, and that's for every kind of workload, is that you only have a limited set of currently data that's being accessed. And over time, that unstructured data, over time, will get accessed less and less. Yeah. So this opens up an opportunity for something like cloud storage extensions. Yeah. So what we could have here with a solution like StorSimple is that we have, over time, we only use StorSimple for the direct accessed files, the things that we use frequently, and for anything else we put into Azure Storage if we need it. All right. Now, it's an end-to-end solution, meaning that you implement it into your on-premise through a nice CUSI interface, and then you can have either the choice whether you can whether you want a virtual appliance or just want to bucket it over. Yeah, the capabilities that are in there are more like that's a slide that shouldn't have been in here. The capabilities that you have are just a little bit like storage today on-prem. So you can and you want to have primary storage, you want to have archival storage, but also the scenarios of disaster recovery become very, very important. So what has this StorSimple in place for you? Well, first of all, it's about devices. As I said, mine died. So, and you have a choice between two different devices. We'll just go over the specs in just a second, but already take a look at how it looks. And on the other hand, we have a management environment, a general management environment with virtual appliances which run in Azure. So what you basically need is an enterprise agreement or a Azure subscription and to buy an appliance. Now, if you're interested in an appliance, sometimes it could be very interesting just to take an EA. I don't know if they still do that here in Sweden, but sometimes it happens that you can get an enterprise agreement and a prepay, you can get a StorSimple appliance with it. So that way you can use the Azure EA for your consumption of your storage and just use the storage appliance for your day-to-day use. So you're not paying for the StorSimple device. If you want to know about pricing, talk to your local Microsoft account manager. They will give you the correct current pricings. Sometimes they can differ from environment to environment. Sorry. Okay. So what are these devices? Well, we have two types. We have two models, an 8100 and an 8600. And the difference is mainly in between the number of the capacity of storage that they have on board. So for the 8100, you have 15 terabytes of storage with a capacity of SSD of 800 gigabytes. So that's the bucket of SSD storage. For the 8600, it's up to 2 terabytes, yeah, with a maximum capacity of 40 terabytes. And then you have um, maximum capacity of cloud storage that you can use as a flow of a bucket. So the 200 terabytes for the 8100 and the 500 terabyte for the 8600. Yeah. And as you can see, the effective local capacity can be between 15-45 terabytes and between 40-120. That's because of the compression factor and of the deduplication that you can have. Right. Also, the sizings in the form factor are different. So for the store simple 8100, it's one unit, one times two units. And for the other one, it's two times two units because you have a controller array and you have a EBOT array that comes with it. So those are actually two devices for the 8600. So what can we do with this device? So we have the store simple manager, yeah, which can do DDoP compression and encryption of your data. Yeah. It has auto-tiring capabilities. I will explain that in a second. It can provide in-cloud snapshotting. Sorry, that's a tongue twister. Also restores for disaster recovery. Yeah. And it has some security measures that you can put on too. If you take a look at the physical sides of the device, well, there's a nice image of a store simple device looking here. And the cool thing is that if you ever order one, they come from Mexico. They're being built by Seagate. It's a company that they bought a couple of, not Seagate, but it's a company that they bought a couple of years ago. And they're now branding it on their own as a Microsoft device. So if you ever order one, you need to wait a couple of weeks of it because it comes from Mexico. So it will come with a sombrero and start singing and start drinking tequila when it arrives. Well, basically that's it after you've installed it, right? So, and if it doesn't die. All right. Just for your info, some more specs. So what you have, it's fully redundant in power supplies and in network interface, so you can just balance it. There's physical installer guides available on the Azure website. It's a step-by-step procedure. Yeah. The only thing that I'm going to show you in a step-by-step slide is how to register the device and set it up from the moment you've slid it into the rack. Because there's a slight console that you need to maintain and that you need to get up and running before you can use it into the cloud. Okay. One thing that is very important is the fact that you can have non-disruptive software upgrades. That's a little bit of a pun twister here because mine failed, so unfortunately. But normally it shouldn't have any impact when you do updates. So you can go into a kind of maintenance mode, and that way your appliance can be updated without an impact to your end users. Yeah. So that's a very important part. Yeah. This is a bit of view of the back part, and you can see. So the top one is the 8100. As you can see, there's these are the images that I've taken from the Azure website, where you can actually see how you have to hook it up to a power supply, to your networking cables, and so on and so on. Yeah. And as you can see, the bottom one is actually two different devices with the iSCSI interface on the bottom, which are just the bunch of disks from the array. Right. Also, the links for your convenience. I think the slides will be made available normally. So I hope for you guys that you just can download and click the link. And elsewhere, just go to the storage store simple pages on Azure, as I can show you here. So here it is. So this is documentation. Just go to documentation, data and storage, and here is this store simple. And if you then go and take a look at how to unpack and rack and cable your store simple, it actually has a picture of showing how to open up the box, how you can take it out very carefully, have you know the procedure, right? You've all been, for those that have been doing box moving, yeah, this is actually moving two boxes, the empty one and the full one. And then just put it into the rack and connect it. And as you can see, there is even the way you should open up the box is being described in a very newbie way. So you can't do it wrong, basically. Yeah. And then you have the the full way of how to mount the screws onto the enclosure, put the rails into the rack, slide it in, fix it, and then you can do the cabling. And as you can see, everything has been labeled, so you can't be wrong, giving you all the subscription of everything that's on there. So as you can see, there's 1 gigabyte network interfaces, there's 10 gigabyte network interfaces. I've heard that they're upgrading them, so there could be some new stuff coming out in the future. And here you have the full cabling schema that you need to have it fault resilient and make sure that it's always on and always available, high availability. So as you can see, that's really not hard to do, right? Now, one of the harder parts in the device is the real setup of the first booth. Yeah. You actually need to go to a console, and for that you need to have a PuTTY or SSH access. So you need to connect to it. The way you have to connect to it is also being explained on the website, so it's fully. So I took some screenshots from there. So first of all, you get this nice interface stating in what language do you want to install it. Yeah. If you want to make it hard on yourself, do it in Mandarin, Chinese, if you're not Chinese, or have something like, I can't read the middle one, but apparently a command prompt can't handle it very well, but most of the people tend to go with English, right? And then you need to, then you get a menu stating the different things that you can do. You can log in with full access. You can log in to a peer controller with full access, only limited access. So there's some granular control on who's connecting there. And then in the end, you need to configure your IP, because you need to give it an IP. You need to give it the correct routing and all the network settings. And if your network is set up correctly and your VLANing and all that stuff that you want to do in your network is OK, then normally this wouldn't be an issue. And just if you get a good, stable network, this won't be an issue. Very important one, would you like to configure a web proxy? Well, if you have a network which is using a web proxy, this is very important, because you need to make sure that the device can go outside and can talk SSL. So it does make a connection to Azure over SSL 443. So that's connectivity that you need. Yeah. So there's no way of not having that if you want to use the Azure features. Okay? So a very important one. And then you've been asked to give a device administrator password. Yeah, so you need to be able to have secure management on that. And then when everything goes well, you get this last screen. And this is where people, like, if they don't read it correctly, they click it away and then they're in trouble. Why is that? I don't know whether you can see this, but if you take a look here, if you take a look here, there's it. Why isn't my pen working? There we go. So if you take a look here, it will generate a key that you need for registering the device in your Azure environment. And that will make the connection, the secure connection between the devices. It will be used as a storage key for encrypting your data and also for the communication. So it's a pre-shared key that you get from upon the device startup and the device registration. And then you get this mechanism. So if you register the device into the portal, I can show you where you have to do that. So, who's expecting this to be already in the new Azure portal? Nobody. Okay, good call. So you are aware that there's two portals, right? So for now, there's no ARM support yet for StorSimple. So you can only do it through the Service Manager. For those who don't know the difference, so Resource Manager is the new way of working with Azure. And it works in basis of resource groups and solution-based, where the service manager is more asset-based. So from a DevOps perspective, this becomes more and more important. I told you I was going to refer to it again. So if you want to use Resource Manager, you can't create devices yet. But probably come very soon, because we have already a vast support in PowerShell for managing the store simple device. For those who don't know PowerShell, everybody knows PowerShell? Who doesn't? Do you dare to raise your hand? Okay. No, it's and I think my fellow friend Rasmus over there will give me credit on that. That if you don't know PowerShell by now, start learning it. It's important. If you want to manage it correctly, all the new good features come through PowerShell, whether it's ARM or Resource Service Manager. They come through PowerShell first. And now there's no more excuse for installing the commandlets either, because you can do it with Windows 10 or Windows Server 2016, all through PowerShell. So you don't even need to have an installer anymore. Packet Manager works like a charm. So what was I going to show you at the portal? So in the portal itself, so the old management portal, you have totally at the bottom, you have a store simple asset tag. I'm going to show it. And this is still the old registration of my device before it crashed, but there's nothing in there, so I can't add anything anymore. Okay. And if you take a look at it, here you have the registration key. So if you need to register a new device, you can create a new one, but it will ask you immediately afterwards for a registration key of your device. So you can have multiple devices and you can manage them from there. Okay. So, but if you want to register the device, you need the registration key, you need to add it here, and then you can only start working with the environment in Azure for managing your store simple. Okay. Now, people tend to believe that security is an issue. It's always an issue if you're doing it wrong, right? But the device communicates over a very safe way. So what happens is, you first of all, you have account access by the means of an administrator, which you define, as I showed you earlier, in the SSH window, right? Then second of all, by the means of the key that you entered, there's a secure channel being set up. Yeah. This basically works through two AES 256 encryption key. Yeah, that's being used for that. With even the data in flight, so once the data is being moved over to the cloud, it's also being encrypted, and it stays encrypted on the Azure storage account. So what it basically does is, if you want to tip over the bucket, it will use a storage account that you define, but the data in there isn't readable by humans. It's only readable by the machine. Actually, if you go into a storage account after you create it, it's really obfuscated. You can't see anything correctly there. You can't figure out whether it's files, folders, or anything else. It will have an obfuscated structure. You can access it, but you can't read anything from it. Okay. Then again, if you really want to make sure that you never share your account name and pre-shared key on storage, so that way you're completely safe. All right. For those who don't know that what that is, read upon the Azure storage and you'll know. Okay, so, and then the device itself will also communicate in a safe way with the Store Simple Manager and Virtual Appliance Manager if it needs to be done. Yeah. Also on the device itself, it is being encrypted by customer designed keys. So Microsoft never has the keys. It's always you. You define the key. You give a passphrase and it will be generated. And Microsoft never has access to it. So it's a very secure infrastructure thing. This is an overview of what I was just explaining. So this is for your reading afterwards. So if you still want some extra additional info, you can just read up on it by browsing through my slide deck. So at least I hope. I don't know. Have you heard whether they will... Oh. Okay, so if you still want the deck and they didn't send it through the website, throw me a mail and I will throw it over the wire and on my shared OneDrive. Or maybe I'll just do it after the presentation so that way you can immediately pick it up. Another important question is it compliant, the device? Yes, it is. So industry standards, as with everything in Azure, there's also compliance standards that are being maintained. For customers who are PCI compliant, HIPAA compliant, the most requirements are met. So if there's anyone in a pharmaceutical environment or if there's anybody in a banking environment, yes, these devices can be used. So does that already make you feel safer? Hopefully, okay. If not, I'm not doing my job well. There's some best practices that you can do. When it comes down to internal data management, so if you want to have different departments and stuff, try to implement many storage accounts for your Store Simple Buckets Overflow. Just general thought. Since each account has... that's not correct anymore. That's I mistyped there. It's 512. So it, since each account has two 512-bit access keys, you can have ad hoc in keys for rotation, so that way it makes it safer, yeah, if you want to. Now, how does the device itself work where you can benefit as a customer? As I already explained, or tried to explain earlier, is that you have three types of data storage. You have SSDs, traditional spindle disks, and you have, of course, your cloud storage, right? So all the active data will be put on SSDs. And then, with the threshold being set, it will flow over to HHDs, so traditional disks. If that threshold has been met, then it can flow over immediately to cloud storage. That's basically, in a nutshell, it. So how does this work in refinement, in granularity? So basically, you give some give some tiering, yeah, and then it will be foot pointed to the SSDs, and it will be deduplicated. Yeah. In the last mile, it will be deduplicated and compressed, and it will be put on SAS disks or H hard drives, traditional hard drives. And then, in the end, it will be deduplicated and copied over to the cloud. Yeah. Now, if you want to have it back, if you want to put your content back into the from the cloud, and you want to resolve some data, it just pinpoints back to the pointer in the file, and it will be sent back over the wire and be de-encrypted on the device, and just have the normal device encryption. Yeah. So this is for your understanding. So as you can see here, you can go back to the SSDs, and then from there out, it will be put on the SSDs to faster access. Right. Does this make sense to you? Okay, cool. So, and this is all being managed in an automated way. So if the bucket is full and the threshold has been met, and normally it's between 80-90%, but you can play a little bit with it. It will fill over to the next level, to the next tier. So actually, it's basically a very simple solution. What's in the name, right? But if everything is being automated for you guys, you have the only thing that you need to do is monitor it and make sure that, from a disaster recovery perspective, you are ready to go. Yeah, and everything else will be managed through the device itself. All right. Then, one other capability that you can have with the device is you can have cloud snapshots. Yeah. You can have some point-in-time recovery just by taking snapshots in the virtual appliances, but also from the on-prem performance. And the footprint is really, really slow, really, really small, so the way of doing it is very, very fast. It only takes up of 5 megabytes or something. And the cool thing is that everything, including the metadata of your storage, is also being put in the unit. So it always flows around with it. So as you can see here, just copy your data over and take snapshots of it. And you can put them in the cloud afterwards if you want to. Another cool thing that you can do is have full disaster recovery by the means of virtual appliances. So what you can do is you can have a failover and have it moved into a secondary data center or just in Azure. Yeah, this you can do by using the virtual appliance. So you can take a snapshot, you can put it into the cloud, and then you can easily restore it in the secondary data center if you have a store simple device there, or put it on other data if you want to. It uses the VSS writers in the background, so it does use some traditionally known storage communication. And since it's this lightweighted, the failover is very, very fast, and you can easily test it. There's on the on the management portal, there's a small button called failover where you can test your failover immediately. As you can see here, so you put these snapshots into the virtual appliance, they will be added to the virtual appliance, they will be put into the disks that have been created there, and then you can test your failover and move over to a secondary data center, or just leave it into the virtual appliance, which is running into the cloud. Now, it's not only about failover, you can also use it as a workload monster. It can connect the virtual appliance inside of Azure to your VMs and use the virtual appliance from within there. Let's say for a dev test environment, if you want to replicate your entire environment and you don't want to have an additional storage appliance, this is a very sweet spot solution. Yeah. Also, when it comes down to SQL Server or to SharePoint, you can actually offload some of the data to the store simple and use that as a workload workhorse. Of course, you have the traditional ones like file shares and archives. We'll see what will happen there. It's traditionally SMB3 based, so you can directly connect them and you manage them to either your favorite storage manager or Windows storage pools if you want to. Okay. So there's a vast scenario that you can use this appliance for, and you can easily implement it in any kind of possible hybrid scenario that you want. Even for running applications, for using it as a backend for your applications in a storage environment and you want some fail-safe there, you can easily do that in Azure too. So the virtual appliances and the Azure management, so as I said, it will only be in the traditional management portal. Yeah. It can be automated upon creation through the means of PowerShell. So that's also a capability that you have. And you can have multiple virtual appliances. So if you want to redeploy a virtual appliance in another geographic entity, that's possible too. So that way you can easily connect some workloads closer to that virtual appliance and reuse some of the data there. Okay. How does that work? Well, first of all, in the traditional way of doing it, you can have a connectivity. With that connectivity, you can have the devices. And as you can see here, this is the physical device. There's a virtual, but I cannot do much with it, as I promised you. Yeah. We can take a look, though, what it does. So we have some. Normally, you have some volume containers that have been created, and these are your basically your LANs that you have. So if you want to create, like in a normal storage area, you need to create some LANs. This is where you create them. So the volumes are actually the buckets that you need, right? And then you can apply them to your environment and can start using them. Yeah. From a monitoring perspective, you can have an overview of what's going on, how the performance is running. I do still have some old stale data from a while ago. Normally I have some device performance. That's not here, it's here. From a while ago, let's go over a year. Give it a second. As you can see, it's not much. As you can see, you can actually see when we first implemented it and when it failed. So 28th of September. Yeah. It's a couple of weeks ago, so unfortunately, there there it happened. You have a total overview of what the I/O is, how the read operations are running, latency that you have on the device itself, what the network throughput is, so you can filter upon those. So from a monitoring perspective and from looking at the way the device works, this gives you a good tad of information. I'm sorry that it is so slow. It's come on. Show me. So that way you get an idea of what the inbound and the outbound is. You can always filter on those. For those who didn't know that, you can, in any kind of monitoring window in the old management port, you can just click on the small colored dots. So that way you can only show what you want to see. A lot of people don't know that. Just a small tip that I'm giving you. So as you can see, the inbound and the outbound, there's the number of megabytes or kilobytes that are going outside. You can also see the minimum and the average and the maximum that you have, and so on and so on. So it gives you a good idea of how the device is performing. Now, as I said already, when you want to use the device, you need to create some containers. Yeah? And you need to provision that storage into the through the Store Simple Manager. So you define your containers, the volumes, and these will be your buckets that you design. Yeah. So this is where the thresholds will go. Yeah. And once that threshold has been met, it will fall over to the cloud storage. And as with any other container, you can have multiple volumes, and that way it will be created in a separate storage account, for instance, it's like it's being designed for a secondary department or something. You can even take backups of these devices, yeah, and you can have policies on them. And by default, there is a policy that's been defined, but you can easily change that. You can design it from a backup policy that you have today. So if you have a retention period that you want to keep and you want to have a monthly or weekly rotation or whatever you have, you can easily design that too. So if it can just go along with your normal backup capabilities and your backup procedures. Okay. Now when we talk about the virtual appliances, It's very good to recreate workloads into the cloud. So it's not only for failover, but most of the time you will be using it for failover when your on-prem dies. Is there anybody here in the room that already runs disaster recovery on Azure? So offloading your data to a subscription in Azure. Nobody? Not even from an infrastructure design? No? We have some work to do here, Rasmus. A lot of work. Right. The only things that you need to do, and I can show you how to create a virtual appliance, that I can show you, is you need to have a virtual network in place. And when it's hybrid, you immediately can have your devices hook up to that one too, because you have the connection through a side-to-side VPN or an express route. You need a storage account, which is already created, or you can have it created for you. And then, in the end, you just click the next button and then it will initiate a virtual device for you. Now, the device itself, it's not like an 8100 or an 8600. There's a different limit there. So what it will generate is an older series called the 1100 device, which is a lot smaller of a footprint, and will have up to 30 terabytes, if I'm not mistaken, on disk storage. So what it basically does, it will generate for you a VM with an image from that Store Simple device, and that will be accessible through that virtual network to your other servers. And I will show you how that works. So here we have our devices that have already been created. So you see, actually, this is a physical. This is a virtual one. As you can see, the model is 1100. So you can easily create a new virtual device. You give it a name. And as you can see, it will follow the same rules as it does with a storage account. So no capitals, only smalls. Yeah, only small letters. So you need to keep that in mind. You give it a virtual network that you want to connect to. So in this case, I have a StoreSimple demo network that I've already set up. You put it into the correct subnet. I only created one just for the flow of the demo. And then you can either choose a new storage account or a storage account that will be created for you. And this will automatically be connected to that virtual appliance. Then you need, this is very important because a lot of people don't read that. I understand that this virtual device will be hosted in a Microsoft data center. So that way you know that you're putting your data into the cloud. That's for compliance reasons that they're asking it. Let's press OK. And for some reason I cannot see the OK button. All right, there it is. And now we'll start creating a virtual appliance. So what it does in the background, and that I can show you, because this is a procedure that takes about 12 to 18 minutes, depending on the resource utilization in the data center. Because if you know what's going on when you create a virtual machine, Fabric Controller needs to look for some room, it needs to find some storage space, and then it would start deploying the image that you just created. And if you have some noisy neighbors on the wire, it will take some time. So basically, it will now start creating a VM, as we have here. Why didn't? All right. As I created here already, it's this one. So I created here already a virtual device. And as you can see, I can't connect through RDP. Why? Because it's a shell interface. So you can connect to it through the shell, and you can manage it from there. So this is actually the virtual appliance that has been created. And as you can see, no, you can't see. As you can see here, it has created a lot of disks where then all the data will be stored on, and that will be seen as your traditional SSD storage that you are using in the traditional appliance. So that way, it's more or less the same than having your appliance available. Okay, it's fairly easy. Yeah. And then it's just a matter of correcting and creating your volumes, making sure that they flow over, and basically that's it. It's not simple. It's simpler. It can be simpler than that. Also, there might be some pitfalls, but mostly it has to do with the communication on your device, and that there's somewhere a network limit for communication with the device. As you can also see, you can shut down the device. So if you want to stop making costs of it and you want to use it in a dev test environment, you can also shut it down by the means of the automation capabilities that you have in Azure. Just a small scenario. So for instance, you can have you can start doing cloning of your data, and all of a sudden your data will fail into the on-prem device. You can immediately hook up to the internet, connect to the data there, or have your VMs use the data over there. You can do that for one set, or you can do that for all the sets that you have available. So as I said, I will be finished much faster than you think due to no real demos. But I do have some good read up on the StoreSimple device and on hybrid storage itself. There's a very good ebook available on the Microsoft Virtual Academy site, but there's also a Microsoft Shortlink, which is aka MS Hybrid Storage ebook, which explains all the different hybrid storage mechanisms. So not only StoreSimple, but also some other patterns in storage design. It's a good book. It's available in EPUB, PDF, and MOBI, so for any mobile device which is reader capable. Yeah. A good starting place for your StoreSimple and all the announcements is the StoreSimple blog. So all the different product teams and product groups have their own blogs. I would advise you to take a look there and take a look at all the news that they're saying on the new capabilities of the upcoming device and the upcoming service capabilities in the Azure Virtual Manager, right? And I do hope that it will be very soon into the new portal that we can have ARM resources and that we can deploy all these new capabilities with JSON-esque languages. For those who don't know, it's JSON-based ARM. So maybe one thing that I still want to show you is that if you want to do it through PowerShell, you have basically all the commands at your disposal. If you want to find them easily, just do get command, start simple star in the module Azure. If you run this little piece of script, you can see that there's actually a lot of, let me make that a little bit smaller, maybe a little bit too big. As you can see here, there's a lot of commandlets available through the PowerShell means, right? If you want to see that I'm not lying, that doesn't exist in ARM, you just can take a look at git command with the noun Azure RM and then stored, because normally they will keep the same thing, and there's no store simple commands in here. As you can see, there's a lot less commands available. And why is that? Because there's no real module available in the RM space, which is store simple. Because now, today, all the management commandlets have their own, I'm looking for them, I think I'm too far. Yeah, here they are. All the management commandlets for RM have their own namespace, as you can see here. So these are, yeah, it always happens. So as you can see here, all these things are ARM-available, ARM-capable commandlets. They use the same syntax. The only thing that's different is in the background, it's no longer the Service Manager API, it's the ARM API, and it's beginning with Azure RM and not Azure. With that being said, I only have one slide to show you. I want to thank you for your attention, for staying, for not running out, shouting out of the room, and, it's boring and all that. I do have one more question, just to make sure. I think this slide says, please evaluate through the app. But to make sure, I just put it underneath. So please do evaluate my session, whether you found it boring, interesting, not in depth enough, or just try to kill me off because I delivered only one level 100 through 150 instead of a 200 because of the lack of demos. So once more, I apologize for that. I do hope that you found it at least a little bit interesting. And for the rest, I only can say enjoy the rest of Tech Days, and I hope to see you once more some other time. Okay, bye-bye.